Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
Hi, I'm excited to welcome the program LaToya Luckett. We all know her from Destiny's Child, and we're talking about Flux tonight at 9 p.m., 8 p.m. Eastern. How are you, LaToya?
I'm good. Excited about the show.
I'm sure you're excited. So, is it done acting, or you've done this before, some of these kind of roles?
You know what? I've been acting now for about 8 years, and each character is different, of course. I think that I've definitely fallen in love with Tanya, who is the character I play on Rosewood. I think that she's a great person, has a great heart, very optimistic. She's a single mother, so she's having to wear a lot of hats and also balance being a mom, working, trying to have a love life and not go crazy at the same time. and I'm pretty sure every woman can relate in some way to her. But I think she's very impressed with Rosie and his heart and him also being so optimistic about things. And he has a great family, so I think she's just very impressed with him.
Interesting, LaToya. So you have I want to jump back and we'll get right into some of the episode and stuff and what to expect tonight. But you've been acting for some years. So after singing, when did you kind of decide that you got the acting bug?
Oh, it was years later. I was kind of in between my first album and my second album, Lady Love, and it came out of nowhere. The opportunity came out of nowhere. An agency called me, asked me was I interested in doing some acting. And I went in for my first audition and got cast in the role of Angie in Preacher's Kid. So it kind of hit me by surprise. It wasn't something that I always wanted to do. Of course, I'd always, desired being an artist, a singer. But this was something new, and I definitely got bit by the bug, and I've been going ever since.
Bit by the bug, and that's awesome to talk about being bit by the bug. Anytime you perform from singing and you say, okay, now this is a different type of performing, but it's interesting. I get to play different people. I don't have to be myself. Sometimes on stage your persona is a character. Now you can do a different character while acting, right?
Exactly, and people ask me that question all the time. Which one is more difficult? And that's the answer right there. As an artist, as an entertainer, a performer, you have to, you're on stage, you're coming from a different place because it's your personal experience, whereas with acting, you get to play different roles, different characters, and I have so much fun building these characters, but it does take hard work. It's a lot of hard work.
Absolutely, and it's a lot of hard work, and you just got to keep going and keep auditioning, and I think it helps that you were such a successful singer, but it still doesn't mean anything, right? You still have to show up every audition and say, okay, here we go.
When I tell you, maybe 5% of the auditions that I go in actually know that I was a singer, that's my background. A lot of these casting agents have no idea who I am, and I am, coming in there with a fresh start, and it's up to me to impress them and get the job. And I've been very blessed to be a part of some great cast because I go in and I work just as hard. I have an acting coach. I study with them before every audition, and I go in and give my very best when I go into that room, hoping for a great outcome. And I've definitely got lucky with this one, being a part of the new Rosewood cast. So I think that that's really, really cool. I think that, it is an advantage for me sometimes, but most of the time I'm going in there starting from square one, like everyone
Absolutely.
Else.
And it's kind of people take a double take, right? Once they figure out, oh, my gosh, meaning people you meet or even your fans of you in acting saying, you aren't part of – are you kidding me?
That's the conversation. Yeah, that happens on set a lot. That's happened on set a whole lot. They're like, wait a minute. that's happened on set a lot.
Exactly. And that's great how you've been able to evolve into this. And Rosewood, what a great show. It seems like a great family cast for sure. I talked to Lorraine about it and stuff, and she was telling me about Lorraine Toussaint about how awesome the cast is to work together and how much fun it is to do Rosewood.
It's like a real family, I'm telling you. And I was so nervous because, of course, when you're coming into a cast that's already, you know, had a season together and they're all friends and loving on each other and you're kind of like the new girl at school. But when I tell you, everybody was so receptive and just, you know, welcomed me with open arms. And it's such a great set to work on because everybody is there, of course, to do the job, but they're there also to have fun with it. And they're excited about the show, and you can really feel that excitement. So I'm blessed to work with a great cast. I really, really, really am.
So what do we expect tonight, the episode tonight? Just a little clues into the episode tonight. What should we expect?
Well, you know, you get introduced to Tanya, my character. And like I said before, she has a great attitude. I think people are going to be pleasantly surprised by, you know, who she is. She's been through a lot. She's been through a whole lot, but she's definitely held her head above water. And I think that, you know, you should just keep your eye on her. This isn't her last episode. She's going to be coming in and out throughout the season. So definitely keep your eye out on Tanya.
So you got your eye on Rosewood then, it sounds like, for sure.
Hey, you never know. That's the thing I love about Rosewood, the show. It's just full of, you know, it's action-packed, it's sexy, it's fun, it's family, and it has a great energy about it. So I think that, you know, like with all the other episodes, it's going to be, you never know what to expect. You just never know what to expect. But definitely
so again,
expect a fun.
Rosie and Villa investigate the death of a treasure hunter tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern on Fox. And LaToya, it was just tremendous. I was a huge fan of you. Whitney's Child, great to hear that you are continuing your career in acting and having great success. And I'm telling you, after talking to you and Lorraine, I tell you, this seems like this Rosewood cast is awesome. I hope that you have great success with Rosewood. Where's the best place we can follow you as well, LaToya? Where can we go?
Oh, at LaToya Luckett on my social media. And it's it's Lee. So LeToyaLuckett. Once again, that's LeToyaLuckett.
Oh, it was awesome chatting with you. And thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. You have a great rest of the day.
Take care. Thanks a lot. Okay, bye-bye. You listen to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Total Celebrity Show. You can check me out on Twitter, at Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google+, and also on Periscope, at Total Tutor, and NeilHaley.com. And I'm so excited to welcome the program, Super Bowl champion, Seattle Seahawk, Doug Baldwin. Doug, thanks for calling, and how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, Doug. And I know you're doing your favorite thing in the world. We're going to talk about it very, very soon. But getting you on the line, how did it feel to be a Super Bowl champion? Kind of describe that feeling when you won the Super Bowl.
Well, that feeling specifically is very hard to describe in words. You know, I've been playing football since I was 6 years old, and the goal has always been to win the Super Bowl. And so when you get to that moment, you know, it's hard to explain. You know, it's like a dream come true. And I know a lot of people don't really get to experience that. And that's truly what it was, a dream come true. And, you know, to be honest with you, though, after everything ended and after we celebrated the Super Bowl win, I looked at myself in the mirror and I was like, okay, is that it? I got to go get some more. I got to feel like this again. And so now it's chasing that dream once again.
And exactly. And you were so close the second time. We definitely don't want to talk about that, but it does teach you adversity to talk to kids for sure and all that stuff and keep rolling. And guys look great this year. While you're here, have you been practicing for the Xbox Challenge, especially now, because you can kind of tell me how it feels to be in Seattle right now for this event, but have you been practicing for the Xbox Challenge?
I have been practicing. You know, I'm a competitor at heart, so obviously I have to prepare myself for the competition, the challenge that's ahead of me. So, yes, I have been preparing. Obviously, I got the best fans in the world alongside me, so I'm excited and ready for the challenge.
So what is the energy like at the Microsoft store with all the fans being there? How does it feel right now?
Well, I'm actually not out there right now because I'm on the phone with you. But from what I've heard, they're all ecstatic and excited about watching me whoop up on we're at the Microsoft store. And they're excited about me whooping up on Patrick Peterson here in a few minutes.
Absolutely. Are you as good on Xbox as you are playing football?
I don't know if you know this, but Madden is my second profession. So I'm not going to, boost my ego too much, but yeah, I think it'll be an easy win for me.
So practicing a ton, something you like to do, you love to do, playing the Xbox and playing Madden, and then you've been also, you're as good on the field as playing Xbox. Oh, wow. Who is your favorite team to play with besides the Seahawks? I know that's a hard question.
Besides the Seahawks?
Yeah.
I won't say they're my favorite just because of what they have as a team, but I grew up a Buffalo Bills fan, and so I'm kind of partial to the Buffalo Bills. If I'm not playing with the Seahawks, and I have to play with the Buffalo Bills just because I'm loyal to the team that I was rooting for when I grew up. So I would have to say the Buffalo Bills.
And who do you feel is going to be the stiffest competition during the challenge? You know, this is a long challenge. You got to keep winning to move on for your charity, but who do you think your stiffest competition is going to be?
You know, I'm gonna approach it just the way we do on the football field. You know, my stiffest competition right now is Patrick Peterson. That's all I can worry about. I got to get past him in order to get to the next round. So we'll focus on the task at hand. So he'll be the stiffest competition as of right now.
And that's great. And that's the thing. You focus the same way playing Madden on Xbox as you do on the approaching a game. And that means, oh my, that's going to be a battle for sure. And I'm sure Patrick Peterson has the same idea and preparation ready for you, isn't he?
Well, he should. You know what? I'm at the Microsoft store right now getting prepared for this Xbox NFL Player Charity Challenge. And he better bring it. He better be prepared for it, because if he's not, he's going to get embarrassed.
Yeah. And how does it feel to play a digital game for charity? I mean, that's got to be great.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's kind of, weird in some sense, because we're playing a virtual sport and both of us will be in that virtual game. So it's kind of surreal in some aspects, but obviously doing it for a great cause, and excited to be partnering with Microsoft at the Microsoft store to do it.
Most definitely. And that commercial they did for the Xbox is so hilarious, isn't it? And especially the kind of challenges of how you're getting the fans involved in this entire thing with the players in the NFL. I think that's a great idea.
It is, because it brings everybody involved and it can get everybody excited for the challenge itself.
Exactly. And for sure. And now let's talk about your team. What are your hopes for the Seahawks this year?
Focus at one task at a time, one game at a time. So, you know, obviously we've been able to pull out some tough victories, and we're going to continue to do that, continue to work on getting better, and we'll see what happens at the end of the season. But I can't speculate on it. I can't say what my expectations are. Obviously my expectations in each game are to do well, but I won't put any predictions on the season itself.
Well, it sounds like that's because you are very focused game after game, because every game is a challenge in the NFL, and that's fantastic. And the charity you're going to be playing for, what charity are you playing for?
I'm playing for it's a charity back home. It's called Southern Youth Sports Association. So it's a charity that the organization that I've been supporting for a long time now. Actually, since I was a child, I was actually in their program. So I'm fortunate enough to give back to the program back home in Florida.
Well, it's great what Microsoft's doing for and to get all the fans involved. And good luck tonight. And hopefully you will continue to move on in the challenge. OK.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And Doug, best place we can find info on you? Where can we go?
I don't know. You mean
Twitter?
Twitter?
Yeah. Tweet
Twitter,
you out
Facebook,
and all that.
Instagram?
Everywhere.
Twitter is at Doug Baldwin Jr. And then Facebook and Instagram. Instagram is the same thing, at Doug Baldwin Jr.
Well, Doug, thanks for calling, man. Take care. And I appreciate you coming on the show.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Also, you can follow on Twitter at Microsoft Store to check out all the exciting action that's happening in the challenge. You're listening to the Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment.
All right, I'm excited to welcome the program author and celebrity Kane Hodder. Kane, thanks for calling, and how are you?
I'm doing great.
Well, man, you and I are two big figures. I'm a former professional wrestler, 6'10". You're 6'3". Tell us the story of how you got into acting.
6'10"? Jesus, I think we ought to fight.
Yeah, I think I should be in your next movie whenever you're in another movie. I'm happy to get into this somehow.
You know, I started doing stunts. I mean, I've been a stunt person for almost 40 years. January, it'll be 40 years. So typically, I would just do stunts. The first 20 years of my career was just doing stunts, and I was very happy about that. And then I was in the right place at the right time, and John Buechler made me Jason, and everything changed, all for the better. I can still do whatever stunt work I like to do, and now I do all these horror films, which I've always loved. So it's great.
So how many Jasons were made till you became the Jason? Why did you become the Jason? Because I know you weren't the original Jason. Tell us that story, how
right.
that happened. Yeah.
Yeah, there were six films before I started, six Friday the 13th, and there were six different Jasons. So they never really had settled on anyone. Number seven came up, and the script was written where Jason had to do a lot of stunts this time, and a lot of major stunts, being on fire, stuff like that. So it's a very, even within the stunt business, not everyone does fire. I happened to do a lot of fire, even though I got burned. I did a movie called Prison with Rennie Harlan and Viggo Mortensen in the mid 80s. And I was a stunt coordinator on it, and John Buechler was doing the effects, asked me to wear a full body makeup for a couple scenes. And I had never done that before, prosthetics head to toe. And I really enjoyed it, and I put everything I could into that performance, as small as it was. And the following year, Buechler was hired to direct Friday the 13th, Part 7, and immediately said he wanted me to play Jason. Since nobody had claimed the role really yet, it was an opportunity for me as a stunt person to play that character so they wouldn't have to use two different people. And based on that performance, I did the next three after that. So I did four in a row, and I always felt it was a big honor, and I still do.
Absolutely. And from doing that many films as Jason, what did you learn about that brand? I mean, honestly, it's something that is so iconic in so many ways, Kane, being on the set, being Jason for that many films, and I'm sure doing tons of personal appearances. You pretty much live Jason at times, right?
Oh, absolutely. I did anyway. I don't know if other people approached it that way, but, you know, again, six films had been out. The character was known around the world. I know that sounds dramatic, but it's true.
Yeah.
People knew the character of Jason all over the world. Now, imagine how amazing it was for me to be realizing I'm going to be that guy. And, you know, it still is incredible to me that I was in that position. So because of that, I wanted to do everything I could to do the character justice and add whatever I could without – I wasn't going to ignore previous performances because there were people before me. But I wanted to kind of make my own version without completely ignoring the past. And, you know, I just – always felt it was such an honor, and like I said, I still do, and I fully appreciate the fans, and that's why I tried to do everything I can for the fans if I'm doing an appearance.
And are you still doing a lot of appearances as Jason?
Not as Jason, but a lot of, you know, autograph shows and stuff, because it's a great way to travel the world and meet other fans. I mean, I've been to Ireland this year, England, you know, I did a film in Australia. So I've been all over the place, certainly all over the country. And I've become friends with a lot of people. So when I go back to a show, like, for instance, I'm in Worcester, Mass right now, ready to start Rockin' Shock for the weekend. And I have a ton of friends here that I've become friends with because of doing the show. So I have friends all over the country, and as a result of doing appearances like this.
Absolutely, doing these horror appearances and different things, and you played in other things as well. What made you want to write a book? Tell us about that process.
Well, I mean, you know, I've had an interesting life and not always the easiest, certainly.
Yeah, for sure, for the being burnt with,
because
most
I
of your
got
body.
Burned
yeah.
doing a yeah. fire stunt. Yeah, I got burned doing a fire stunt in my first year as a professional stuntman. Almost died as a result, had terrible care initially. So I always felt that story in itself was a book, because even people that have been burned like I have don't realize how bad it can be if you don't have proper care. So I always knew that was a huge story I wanted to tell, just for, because when I look back on it, I almost can't believe I made it through it. And I'm the one that did it. So, you know, having that part of my life as such an interesting, to me, story. Then I grew up in the South Pacific on a tiny island when I was in high school. So that aspect is very interesting to people. It's an island that's 3 miles long and a half a mile wide. And I went to junior high and high school there. And so that is just a very interesting story. And then, of course, then you have the 40 years of doing films and all those stories. So I just thought, you know, I don't know if anybody's going to want to read this, but I'm going to tell my story. And, you know, it's been very well received.
Well, if you go to events all the time and continue to be in horror films, you have a huge fan following because of who you are and how approachable your willingness to get out there. If you go to events, you're going to sell books. That's the bottom line, Kane. If you go out
right.
and put yourself out there, willing to sell them in your trunk anywhere you go, and then you start the stories you're able to tell are amazing. Say, hey, I got to read this book now. He told me a couple stories while I was signing an autograph, but I really want to know what happened, you know, with Jason. What happened in the Hatchet franchise? All these different things you're doing. So, Kane, what's your latest project you're promoting right now?
Well, right now, I mean, recently, or all year, actually, I've been doing the motion capture for Jason for the Friday the 13th video game, which has been fantastic. I was so happy that they chose me to be Jason in the game. And
congrats.
I just played the game for the first time last week. And it's absolutely incredible. I'm not trying to sell people on it. I am just amazed at how intricate and complicated and fun and challenging it is. And you can play as Jason or as a camp counselor. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how people react to that game, because I know it's going to be good. And, you know, I'm doing the documentary version of my life now. That's almost completed. We've spent the last year and a half putting together the visual version of the book, if you will, and have a couple films coming out, one called Death House, which had all kinds of my friends, horror celebrities, personalities in it, and it was a lot of fun that we shot in Philly. We got, you know, Tony Todd, Sid Haig, Dee Wallace, Mosley, Berryman, Barbara Crampton, Vernon Wells, Sean Whalen, it just goes on and on. All these people that are known for other horror films are all in the same film, so it's very cool.
Awesome. And then you can buy your book for sure. And then we got to stay in touch. We'll connect with each other, Kane, because I guess if you need me in one of your horror films and you want to just kill me, I'm game, especially if you're filming in the Northeast area. I'll just drive up, do a couple scenes with you. Let's set it up, okay?
I think I'd love to kill you, because I like killing guys bigger than me. That movie I did in Australia called Charlie's Farm, Nathan Jones played the killer in that, and he's also 6'10". So it was fun to work with somebody of that size. Unfortunately, in that movie, I did not prevail, because he was the killer. So, but it's interesting being killed also.
All right. You're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Total Celebrity Show. I'm excited to welcome the program Emily Kinney of ABC's Conviction. Emily, thanks for calling, and how are you today?
I am great. I am really good.
You're excited. So excited about Conviction, aren't you? Especially the show and in this role, aren't you?
Totally. I'm really excited to just be a part of a new show. And we've just done two episodes, so there'll be an all-new episode on Monday. And I've been filming up in Toronto, which is a cool new city to be wandering around and getting to know. And it's really fun. Every week there's a new case, which I think is always really cool, and it's fun to watch that unfold in the hour. And we're basically going back through cases where people have been wrongly convicted and are in prison, and we're getting them out of jail.
And what I love about this show, and I heard about it and have talked about it and had some other people on it, I like the fact that it goes after people that are wrongly accused, and that really sometimes we accuse people before we really look into all the details. And that's what's so cool about this show.
Yeah, I think it's a topic that a lot of people are interested in right now. You know, what happens to people who are wrongly convicted and are in prison? Like, how did that even happen in the first place? And I think it's been just a topic that's been really popular now. If you look at like the Serial podcast or the I just watched that Amanda Knox documentary, or Making the Murderer documentary, you know, I think it's something that people are really curious about, like, how does that even happen, that someone, you know, and maybe it wasn't even based on facts the reason why they were put in jail, but more of like some kind of personality thing, or, you know, so I do think it's a topic that's really interesting right now, and it's definitely fun as we work on the cases to see where things went wrong.
Absolutely, and it's a situation where you guys are uncovering these things. So what is your role? Who do you play on the show?
Yeah, so of the group of lawyers in the Conviction Integrity Unit, I play Tess, and she's kind of the newer of the group, you know, very eager to prove herself. So I always feel like Tess has like a lot of facts and is always kind of finding ways to kind of prove her worth within this group. She also has a bit of a secret past that you get to know a little bit more of as the season goes on. So that's another thing that's cool about the show is, you know, it's not just the cases. You really get to see the everyone's personality and the office politics and the office dynamics, and you get to see how those relationships change. And we all kind of, like, each of the lawyers kind of has a secret past or some ulterior motive to why they're doing this kind of work. And so it definitely like ups the drama.
And that's so true. And you talk about playing a lawyer. Did you do any research before that to kind of understand what lawyers do and stuff, Emily, before this role, or have you played a lawyer before?
You know, when I went in for, like, during pilot season and I read this pilot, I said it reminded me of my little sister. My little sister just graduated law school. And just even Tess's personality and everything, like, I was like, oh, this reminds me so much of my little sister. And so I'm really lucky I have her, like, on the phone. If I'm like, what does this mean? You know, what is this, like, what does this crazy phrase mean? Like, I've got her right there, so that's pretty cool.
So you're able
so
to...
So now my parents have two lawyers in the family, one fake one, and one...
Awesome. And so you're able to question at times, right, Emily? She questions you about, this didn't look that authentic. You got to work on this, right? How you handle things,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, given me too many, but I'm sure maybe she will soon. I should ask her to like give me some notes.
Exactly,
some
make
notes
it as most
performance.
Right, for sure. And is this as you said, this character? Have you played a character like this character, or is this completely different to some of the other characters you've played?
No, it's completely different. I've never played a lawyer. I've also haven't played that many, to be honest, like grown-up roles, you know? Like, I feel like for a long time. Like, Beth was more of, like, younger. I've played, I've just played a lot of, I guess in the last couple of years I've played more grown-up roles. Like, I was on Masters of Sex, and that was like, a more, like, grown-up role or whatever. But, it's definitely a different part for me, for sure.
And I
one of the fun things about acting, I guess, you get to, like, into lots of different parts of yourself.
Absolutely. And I know another thing, you're very talented, and you're releasing two new songs on October 28th. Tell us about it.
Yes. So I've been writing so much music, but I'm not going to release an album for a while. So I wanted to go ahead, though, and release some of the music I've been working on, and I wanted to do it in kind of a special way, so I'm actually releasing 7-inch vinyl. So it'll be two new songs. It'll be like an A and B side. And then, of course, you can also download it. So I'll also have it available digital download, like on iTunes, or if you want to stream it, or that kind of thing as well. So the two songs are called Back on Love and Popsicles. So you can pre-order them now, but they'll be available at the end of the month, on the 28th.
And so you can go to pre-order them now. And where can we find information on you? Everyone needs to tune in to ABC's Conviction, 10 p.m. Eastern Monday.
Yes.
But what about you, where we can follow you and find information on you?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram and on Twitter, and I'm pretty active on Instagram. It's just at Emmy Kinney, so EmmyKinney. And then Twitter's the same. And then I also have a website for my music. It's called EmilyKinneyMusic.com. And then Facebook, too, is Emily Kinney Music. So that keeps you updated on all of my shows coming up, or music, or Conviction, or, so acting and music projects. And I'm pretty active on social media, so that's a good place for sure.
Oh, my. It's just amazing how you're doing it all. So keep up the great work. Continue to build your resume, and I'll be rooting for you for sure, okay?
Oh, thank you so much.
All right, take care, Emily. See you later. Bye-bye. All right, so I'm excited to welcome the program Heisman Trophy winner and College Football Hall of Fame coach Steve Spurrier. Steve, Coach Spurrier, thanks for calling, and it's an honor for you to be on the show today. I'm excited to talk to you.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed, glad to talk to all my pals up there in Pennsylvania.
Absolutely, Pittsburgh, yeah, for sure. So
Okay. Tell
me why you wrote this book. You had such a busy career, retired from coaching. What made you want to write the book?
Well, someone once said, if you don't tell your story, someone else will. They will try to tell it. And a couple of years ago, some dude wrote a book that just wasn't accurate. It wasn't a truthful book. It wasn't so much slanderous. It just wasn't accurate. And so when my coaching career days were over and getting to be over, a good friend of mine who's written several books, in fact, he wrote one with Urban Meyer. He's written one with Terry Bradshaw, a guy named Buddy Martin. We started working on it, and after about a year and a half or so, we finally got it pieced together. And my coaching career wound it up, and so it was time to get it out there. And this is my story. This is how it happened. And it's a story about how I was fortunate, blessed to get into coaching. You know, you got to have somebody to hire you for a guy that played 10 years in the NFL. And then some things I learned along the way that enabled our teams to obviously win a whole bunch of games and win a bunch of championships.
Absolutely. I consider you one of the best college football coaches for sure. And the way you transform programs, especially Florida, was just absolutely unbelievable. And when you came in and how you made that program unbeatable in so many ways, you know?
Well, Neil, I appreciate it. Yeah, I tell you what, of course, I played here in the 60s a while back. And we never won an SEC. We missed it by one game two of the 3 years I was here. And actually, when I got here in 1990, Florida did not have an official SEC championship in 57 years. And we actually won six in the first 7 years I was here. So the players were already here. It was just mainly a mindset. raising expectations, getting guys to play together, learning the importance of teamwork, you know, players loving each other, all that kind of stuff. And that's in the book. It's in the book. Obviously, you got to have the great players to win championships, but you can also have a lot of great players and not win championships. Got to get everybody on the same page, pulling together. And we were able to get that done here. And the book, you know, talks about that. It talks about my days at Duke University. We actually won an ACC football championship, the only one in the last 54 years. So it's a lot of motivational type stuff that I think it would be very helpful to people.
Coach Spurrier, now looking back and saying you said you wanted to tell the true story. Some people wrote things that are not true. What kind of things? You really want to be transparent in this book, don't you? To really about who you are as a coach. Yeah.
Yeah, this is how it happened. This is how it happened. These are the important people in my life. We all have a path in life, and there's a lot of people that made it what it is. And certainly I know God has smiled on me in an enormous way and created a path to allow all this to happen for me, my wife, family, and so forth. So I'm very thankful, very appreciative, and looking forward to hopefully this book can help a lot of other people.
Now, Coach, looking at your career and everything, who were your mentors that got you into coaching? Who would you say were the big mentors that helped you to become a great coach?
Well, I think I really learned sometimes when you're around coaches. I've been around some good ones and some not so good. So I think you learn
okay.
from both. You know, you take something from all of them. And probably the coaches I sort of watch and have read some of their books, basketball coach John Wooden. I've read four or five mm-hmm. of his books, his theory on coaching and how he taught his players how to play the game and the mental part, conditioning, and all that. He was a big influence. Bill Walsh, the San Francisco 49er head coach, his style mm-hmm. was sort of the style that I went with. I was the quarterback coach, the play caller, the offensive coach, and the head coach. And certainly I admire those coaches that do that also. So he was a guy I really liked also.
Mentoring quarterbacks, that was one of your big, big things. Who would you say your top quarterbacks you coached? And if you gave a list, would you give a... able to say that, or is that?
Oh, I've got a bunch of them. I've got a bunch of them starting at Duke University. Oh, gosh. You know, we led the ACC in offense all 3 years I was there, and we actually had two different quarterbacks. We had two the last year that we won the ACC, Steve Slayton, Anthony Dilwig, Billy Ray, and then Dave Brown. But and then here at Florida, I had so many go. And Shane Matthews, he was SEC Player of the Year two or three times. And then Danny Werfel and Rex Grossman, all those guys were the SEC Player of the Year. Now, they were surrounded by outstanding players, offensive linemen, receivers, running backs. I mean, we had talent at all the positions. And I've always said those quarterbacks sometimes are about as good as all the guys around them. And these quarterbacks
right.
were really good because of the people around them and so forth.
Because your success, did you write about in the book, your success on the field as a player too?
A little bit. My success on the field in football never reached a big high. I did win the Heisman, I think, because I kicked the field goal against Auburn. In the last couple of minutes of the game, we beat them 30-27, and I think the voting was about a week or two right after that, and we actually lost our last game of the season. I think if the voting had been then, I probably would not have won it. So, as we know, timing in life is everything, being at the right place at the right time and so forth. So, yeah, I talk a little bit about that, but certainly as a football coach, I've been blessed to have much, much more success than I did as a player.
So with retirement, after your long career playing and coaching, what are you currently doing?
I am the ambassador, consultant here at the University of Florida. Yesterday, actually played in a little scramble at the Gainesville Quarterback Club. Talked to them last night. I'm actually going to be the Grand Marshal in the homecoming parade here Saturday, and I'm looking forward to that. I've never been a Grand Marshal before. Have you ever done that?
Never was the Grand Marshal. I don't think you thought of that when you were started playing football.
No, that wasn't on my bucket list. Some guy said, well, you're really scratching off all your bucket list things. I said, that was not one of them. But they asked me to be the Grand Marshal. It is homecoming, and my wife and I are going to get in the convertible and wave to the fans as we go down the street.
You'll always be a Gator, won't you, Coach Spurrier? Always a Gator.
Well, no. Well, yeah, you're always what you went to school, and I met my wife here 50 years ago, and I think two of my daughters graduated from here. But no, when I'm at Duke or South Carolina, that's my school then. And then when you're finished at those schools and I got an opportunity to come back here, it just seemed to be the right thing to do. I've lived in Gainesville, Florida more years than any other city that we've lived. And this opportunity, I'm very appreciative. The president, the AD, the football coach, Jim McElwain, wanted me back. And so I'm thrilled to be here.
Fantastic. Your book again is Head Ball Coach, My Life in Football. You can purchase it in all finer bookstores for sure, but any place we can follow you on Twitter as well, right, Coach Spurrier?
Yes. I do have a Twitter account, and we just put out that we're having a book signing down here in Gainesville at 1-3 Saturday before the game against Missouri. The Gators play Missouri at homecoming. So if they're around, I don't know if your people up there are going to get down here, but there'll be a lot of Florida people hopefully at the bookstore Saturday afternoon.
Oh, we're on stations in Florida as well, so people are going to have to go and drive to get to go to meet you for sure, Coach. Florida loves you, the whole state of Florida. So, yeah, we're nationally syndicated all over the country. So, yeah, definitely. If you're in Florida, go see Coach Spurrier. Thanks for calling, Coach, and best of luck with the book and your retirement.
Yeah, nice talking with you. All righty.
Bye-bye. Take care, Coach. See ya. Okay, bye-bye. You're listening to the Total Celebrities Show. We'll be back in just a moment. Fantastic, excited welcome to the program from Gold Rush on the Discovery Channel, Todd Hoffman. Todd, thanks for calling, and I know you're excited about Friday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, the seventh season of Gold Rush, aren't you?
You know, sometimes I'm excited, sometimes I'm not. You want to know the truth? I go, some of the seasons are brutal for me to watch. And some aren't. So this is a crazy season. I'm going to be honest with you. Team Hoffman, it's, there's a lot of drama that ensues on our team. So it's a crazy season for us.
A crazy season. So kind of catch me up on this. I watch some of the Discovery shows. I'm so busy. But, you know, the whole process of your success and Can't Believe It's a seventh season and how it developed and stuff.
Well, you know, it's people like gold, and a lot of guys, they want to dig gold, and there's probably nothing cooler that a guy can do. You know, it's right up there, probably right up there with driving a NASCAR car or something like that, but is to dig raw gold out of the ground. And so, you know, they've been watching us have good years, bad years. They've been watching our seasons, you know, our fans for years, and it's just a highly rated show, not just on Discovery Channel, but I mean, it's a worldwide deal phenomenon. I mean, a lot of Germans and English folks love the show, so it's been a crazy ride, man. You know, 7 years of this, it's unbelievable, and I would say that this season is probably one of the most dynamic as far as TV-wise, I would say the viewer is going to sometimes throw their cup at the TV, and sometimes they're going to cheer. I think it's going to draw people in emotionally to the story, probably more than any other season that we've ever had.
So that's why you talk about the excitement, because it can become very draining, can it, Todd? Some of the drama that happens and the challenges of making a living being a gold miner.
Yeah, I mean, it's already hard. And what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to leave Canada and come back to the United States. I'm trying to mine in the lower 48, and that's not an easy feat to do. Plus, starting over, you know, it's tough. I mean, if I was to talk about this season, I would call it a roller coaster for our team. It's just unbelievable. It doesn't mean it's all down. There's some unbelievable highs too. So we're talking about a season of Gold Rush that's, I don't think anybody's going to be disappointed at all. It's incredible.
Well, it's always great when you have a great season and what to expect. But I want to kind of touch upon, because everyone needs to tune in again, Friday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, to Gold Rush on Discovery. The point I want to make is the challenge of this profession. What percentage chance do you strike gold in your whole career as a gold miner?
Oh, you know, even when you test, gold is so elusive. It's where you find it. So it's hard to test for. Some ground you can drill for, some you can't. Sometimes you just got to go for it. You just got to mine it. And then you realize, you know, hey, I'm losing X amount of thousands of dollars a day. And then as you're digging, all of a sudden you pop your tire. You pop your tire on your car, it might be $400, you know. You pop a tire on a loader, it's $5,000, right? So we're talking about stakes so high. Stakes are big. It's hard to get raw gold out of the ground. People don't realize, you know, where gold comes from. And it's used in, not only is it just for jewelry, it's used in, every cell phone has a little bit of gold in it. So
wow,
it's used in a lot of industrial uses, you know, it's crazy.
I mean, and it's such competition, even on the show, Todd, you're competing against a lot of other miners. I noticed that in different things, the way they set up these shows is that there's different teams. So you're competing against them just for whatever gold's out there, right?
Yeah, I mean, but in the end, I mean, aren't we all just competing with ourselves? We're competing
exactly.
with ourselves, competing with against nature. You know, we're competing with, you know, with our own decision-making. I mean, not that you've made any bad decisions in your life, but, I mean, you look back and you see to your, say to yourself, you know, if I'd have taken this path or I'd have taken that path, you know, and then on top of that, you know, what I do is I try to rely on my faith. Now, I say that, I'm no poster boy for the Christian faith, but I tell you what, I do love God and my team does, and we're trying our best to keep the train on the tracks, right? And it's tough, man. You're gonna see some crazy stuff this year, stuff that we're not real proud of, to be honest with you. And there's a couple altercations that we don't like. So we're not bragging about them. It's just, you know, that's what happens. It's life, you know. So it's a crazy season, I'm telling you. It's season 7 of Gold Rush. You don't want to miss this one.
Well, I can definitely, I know that our listeners out there and also viewers, because also we make this into a YouTube, it goes out on television, all these different places for syndication, Todd. Listeners and viewers, well, I know cannot wait for it. And I just think that just the whole process of striking gold, I love the point about your faith. Make sure you offer your work to God all the time, Todd, and you're going to have success. Yeah, everyone's going to bang it out.
I agree with you. It's that you were born and put on this earth for a purpose. You were not an accident. Any of your listeners out there, I'm telling you, God created you. You were on this earth for a purpose. You need to find that purpose and kick ass.
Got it. That's a great quote. I'm going to have to use that in my vines. I'm just starting Vine now. Can you believe that? So what about for social media, Todd? Best place we can find information on you and stuff and about you. Again, Gold Rush, Friday night, 9 p.m. Eastern. But do you have a place social media people can follow you?
Oh, yeah. You just go to Facebook.com/GoldRushTodd. You can get me at Gold Rush Todd on Twitter. And if you want to see me sing some songs, go to YouTube and just search Todd Hoffman Singing. That's it, man. And you can, I got four four cover songs on there, and they're kind of entertaining. They're real good.
Well, Todd, thanks for calling. I'm glad to hear about your faith. Best of luck in the season, and thanks for taking the time.
Take care, bro. See ya.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. You're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. Fantastic. Excited to welcome the program Vine star Jason Nash. Jason, thanks for calling. How did you become this the man on Vine? How did you do that, man?
Oh, I don't know. I got really lucky. I just got on at the right time. That's pretty much the key to any platform, internet platform, is you just have to be there when it starts.
And that's so true. And so you were starting when it was in the ground up then, Jason, right?
Yeah, I got there, like, right away. I was doing a movie called Jason Nash is Married for Comedy Central, and it was just about to come out. And I thought, oh, well, maybe I'll get on this app and I'll pick up, sell some more movies or whatever. And it just took off. And it was a weird thing because I was 40 years old and everyone on the app was like 18. And so,
yeah,
I was just doing my thing, but it was really weird to begin hanging out with 18-year-olds, and I had a family and two kids, and so it was this total life change where I was kind of young again, but I also felt really old, and that's what the movie's about. That's what FML is about. So
exactly, and I love it. Because guess what, Jason? I'm 43, and I'm better than a lot of millennials on social media. I'm not as big time as you are, but I'm on lots of platforms and have a huge radio audience, internet and terrestrial, and I'm trying to build this brand. And I learned from pro wrestling how to promote. So I watched the trailer, and I was so into this because it's so true how our society's changing in this way. And they want followers.
That excites me so much when someone my age gets it or is interested in this. Because I've literally, it's the movie for kid people that are like from like 12 to 25. They love it, and they love the idea of a movie about apps and technology. And so when I hear someone my age like it, I'm like, oh, that's so great. Because there's two storylines in the movie. There's the 19-year-old kid storyline, and then there's my storyline, the guy with the wife and kids who's on a road trip trying to save his family. Like, so that's great. I love to hear that.
Yeah, and see, I think that's so cool because the fact of the matter is you see these YouTube sensations, you see these Facebook sensations, you see these Vine sensations, and they just came out of nowhere. People love them, and everyone is looking for the 15 minutes of fame. And so I look at, by interviewing celebrities, it builds my social media up. And I hope someday to have a following like you in one of the platforms that I able to develop for certain things. And then I could go out and meet and interview the top celebrities right in front of them. And I'm sure you've met an unbelievable amount of celebs, haven't you? You're a celeb yourself from Last Comic Standing and Comedy Central, but you've met some unbelievably big people, haven't you?
Well, I don't know. Not really. I don't think so. I mean, I never think about it that way. I'm sure there's some comedy people I maybe have met, but I'm trying to think. Who have I met as a celebrity?
What about red carpet and stuff, Jason? Come on now.
Red carpet? I don't know. I don't even ever think about it. I never even think about someone's a celebrity or not. It's totally not in my mind. Like, I see, who's someone I met that I was, like, really starstruck? I think I met Bryan Cranston once, and then and was very... only because I was so into Breaking Bad. And then he was funny because then you met him and then you're like, oh, he's a completely regular guy. He's like, oh, my God. You know what I mean? Like, at first you're like, wow. Oh,
there you.
That's Walter White. But then,
See, that's great. You have that thought process. Yeah. Jason, that's great. You have that thought process. I said it's great you have that thought process, but I look at it in a different way. I look at it that celebrity sells and I can make money. So... I look at it from that end, that the more social media, so I look at your following and say, hey, I want to take care of my family. So this is why it speaks so well. you're going out and trying to increase your following so that you could become something, sell something, and become something. So tell us that storyline by going out with somebody who has a million followers, correct? Your friend,
yeah.
the young kid, and then you travel the road. And you're doing exactly what I would want to do in your movie. I want to do exactly in a way with my business at one point in time, going in front of those top celebs. Because in your movie, you are connecting with some people throughout that are internet sensations, but also well-known, right?
Right. Yeah. That's exactly the movie. That's how YouTube and Instagram and Vine work, is people collaborate. Different channels, and then the channels get bigger viewership, you know. So, which is so interesting to me. Like, radio hosts would never do that, you know. Back in the day, they would never say, "Okay, come on my radio show, you come here." You know, there was always like a radio war. And so that's the other interesting thing about it. So, yeah, if you can hook up with the right people, you can get a bigger following.
And that's what you chose with this kid. Right, by following him around, I'm going to pick up their followers.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, in the movie, they have like a really good relationship, but it's weird because, you know, one of them could be his dad. And so, you know, my character definitely likes him and wants to help him, but he also does need him for the million followers, or else he wouldn't be able to grow. And so then that's sort of what happens along the line, is like, it becomes blurry. The lines become blurry as to like, who is he using him, or are they really good friends, and they get lost along the way, because when you're doing this, like anything in life, you know, you're after something, it can become cutthroat, and you lose sight of what's important just for money. And especially, I don't know if you're a dad or not, but you think you said you were, but
I have,
you know,
five,
you have
kids,
a family.
Kids.
It's hard. Okay, yeah. Great. You sound like you have five kids. You have an intensity when you talk, which I love, but it's like, I got five kids, Jason. All right. But I have two, and I sound like that a lot too. So, but yeah, so in other words, when, you know, you don't have to tell you, when you have a family, it's pretty much like, okay, well, I'll do whatever I need to do here to, you know, get my kids clothes and food and whatever. And he doesn't really get that, because he's 19, and, you know, you and I both remember when we were 19,
Jason, I was traveling the world as a pro wrestler at 19. So I was a minor league.
You were traveling what?
The world as a minor league
pro
wrestler at 20. Yeah.
Oh my God, that's awesome. And did you love it?
Oh, I mean, I loved it. And at one point, when you have to have a family, it can't be out. So in fact, I became a teacher and thought I was out of the entertainment world, and somehow started an education talk show, and it expanded to all these things. And then I got into interested in interviewing celebrities. It's more for the story, but I also know celebrity sells. And I love to talk and chat with people, and I can relate to them in so many ways, from road trips and who I hung out with. Like, I knew The Rock before he was The Rock, Jason. I beat Jerry
sure.
the King Lawler. So I don't know if you're a big pro wrestling fan. I know all those guys really well.
When I was younger, I was a huge fan. And then I dropped off and I got older. But no, I remember The Rock, and I remember Jerry the King Lawler. And my favorite was Superfly Snuka. That was, my dad took me to see him at the Boston Garden a couple times. And I thought he was just the best. I don't know why. I look back at it now, and I'm like, oh, he wasn't the most charismatic dude, but he, you know, I guess because he jumped from the top rope is probably what I liked.
Right. So you remember?
And he was great to watch. Yeah, Gold King Kong Bundy. You know what I did like last year? I just watched a ton of Ric Flair, the grandstanding or promoing. Oh my God.
He's awesome.
It is some of the funniest stuff you can watch. He comes out, he just insults the crowd, and he just says how much better he is than the crowd. And it's really, really magical. I don't know if you're into watching people promo like that, but I'm sure you are.
I'm
right?
interested.
You had to do that.
I am. I'm huge
yeah.
on that. You know, Flair, Hogan, all that. So, Jason, we can purchase getffml.com, and the book is FML
sure.
the Movie. And where can we find information on you, Jason?
Oh, I'm just at Jason Nash on Twitter and Instagram. Facebook and fine, Snapchat, all that stuff. You can figure me out there.
It's your social media beast. Take care, Jason. Thanks for calling, man.
All right. Thank you. Have a good weekend.
Bye-bye. You too. Bye-bye. You're listening to the Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment.